Welcome to Coaching Kids Curling, a podcast for youth curling coaches and program organizers. I'm Glenn Gabriel, a certified curling coach and coach developer who lives in Pickering, Ontario, Canada. My mission is to give you the advice, resources, and inspiration you need to make your program better. In our last episode, I was joined by Mike Rogotsky of High Park Club in Toronto and Mike Smith of Lindsay Curling Club. We shared strategies to help manage different ages and skill levels in our youth curling programs. In part two, we let loose and talk more about hit, draw, tap, practice structure, obsessing over attendance, and our plans for the end of the curling season. Well, I think High Park Mike hinted at it, but yeah, we used a variation of hit, draw, tap at our Little Rock Spiel in January. And I knew that, like, most of my coaches don't know what that is. So even before that January Bonspiel, we had to have at least 2 weeks of trials. Like, like, just to try it, just to get used to the routine of it. And then even on the day of, I was concerned that we wouldn't get all 36 shots or whatever we decided on done. Because the way we did it, it was like three shots of each type per kid, nine shots.
Oh, okay.
Like, yeah, yeah.
Nine shots per kid times four on a team, right? So that's 36 per team. And like an hour, like do the math, right? Like, you know,
Yeah.
Yeah. So
it's a long time. Yeah.
Yeah. So I get it. Like I appreciate the hit, draw, tap thing. It's just that, like, that's not a focus for me. Like, I've got other things on my plate. I've only got four Sundays left. My program tends to end a little earlier than most at my club, just because I don't want to run into their closing days. Like, this is a very pragmatic, logistical sort of view of it. And you know what? Maybe at this point, I'll tell you a bit about what we do with my Little Rocks. So generally speaking, I look at the list. Like, I had 36 kids, and that was deliberate because it's six per sheet, right? Six, because we have six sheets. I ranked them in terms of their age and how old they were. And I took the top six oldest and put them on one. And then the next six, all of them were basically at the same point, even the experienced ones, because there was a 2-year layoff, right? So basically they were starting from scratch, all of them. So I wasn't worried about who had experience versus who may not. So I divided them basically into six groups, right, of six kids, the oldest on sheet one, the youngest on sheet six. And then the thing with my program is I do stations. So it's a little hard to describe here, but the stations would say be at the near end 1-3-5, and then the other stations would be far end 2-4-6. And then there's like six stations, and then I rotate them like I'm thinking clockwise. So throughout a practice, they spend 10 minutes at a station, then they move to another one, then they move to another one, like as a clock, right? And so, this is the thing. I know High Park Mike talked about, you know, if you're working with the same kids all the time, you're working with the same coaches, you develop a rapport, you might be able to track what their progress is a little more finely. And I agree with that there's an advantage. But the other advantage, I would say, with stations is that, let's just say a kid is not responding to a particular coach, right? They get to work with lots of different people. And, you know, there's all kinds of styles of coach. I've got like really experienced coaches. I have new ones. I have parents who barely know how to curl, but they have come onto the ice and they've learned on the fly. And then also within the groups, as much as I've, you know, most of the time it's those same six kids throughout. They're on the same team or the same like group all year, but I make a deliberate effort to try and mix them up at least once or twice a year. It's good to get the oldest kids and the youngest kids working together at least sometimes. The best example was this last Sunday. We did this thing called the scavenger hunt, and that's sort of a tradition at our club where I give the kids a list of things to do, a tasks, and they do it in these sort of Harry Potter style houses. So we've divided all the kids into four groups of nine, right? So, and they're all named after sort of historical characters in our club. So I'm the leader of Prentice House, right? So that's me. I'm Dumbledore for Prentice House. And the great thing about that is that it's a house that's composed of like 12-year-olds and 6-year-olds. And they're all working together to accomplish a goal. When it comes to age and skill, like sometimes we have to do things, or I believe we should do things that where it doesn't matter. Like that's why we did bocce games at our Bonspiel. It was a way to equalize, you know, someone who's a 12-year-old playing with someone who's a 6-year-old. They're playing the same game and they can both be competitive at it. So like that's my philosophy if you're asking me what I do. And by the way, the idea of doing stations and doing that sort of thing, I can be very, I was going to say OCD, but that's maybe it's more like even like the hour, I'm taking attendance up to the hour before they come in so I can equalize the groups. That's how I guess obsessed I am sometimes with this.
Well, you want it to, you want it to run well. You want to have some structures. Like I'm a big proponent of structure build success. If you're organized, if you have the structure in place, the kids are going to have fun. The coaches are going to have fun. They're going to have a good experience. So we don't do it at High Park Club like you do at East Shore Club, but I can totally see the benefits there of having that movement from station to station, going there from this time, seeing the other, you know, kids. Absolutely, Glenn, they do respond differently to different coaches and better, and coaches will perhaps coach different kids they're not accustomed to better. So there's a lot to be said by your method, and it's even given me something to think about as I'm starting to, you know, just always looking for ideas. That's some good stuff.
Glenn, do you, so you have, I would assume, one parent at each station, or do you have two at each station?
If you're going to implement something like this, you need to have help. And we're lucky. We've got at least two parents at each station. Like we've got up to, I'd say, a dozen people helping us between juniors and adults at any given Sunday. Now, a big reason is because a lot of the kids in my program have parents who curl. And they're there anyway, so they're helping out on the ice. So I consider myself very fortunate. I understand that not all the clubs can do this, but because we have this, you know, this bounty of curling coaches, you know, that's how we're going to try and utilize them as most effectively as possible.
And do you just, you yourself, you just act as a rover then? You just
I fill the gap. So when if there's a coach that's missing, there always is, right? There's always someone that's missing, or someone, or a kid is having a meltdown. Coach Glenn, come over here and deal with it. Like I go from sheet to sheet and station to station just to make sure that things are running. And you know, I consider myself lucky. I can do that. But in the beginning of my program, when I had like 20 kids and I was like one of three or four coaches, I was that guy on sheet one. You know, working with those three kids, right? Like I've been on both sides of it. Anyway, the other thing I'll tell anyone who's listening to this and thinking about implementing this, I'm a pretty obsessed, like focused guy in terms of lesson planning and structure. So one, I believe that I'd rather be overstructured than understructured. And if things have to be changed, so be it, right? Like I can be flexible too, but I'd rather be overstructured. And two, I'm crazy. Like I'm a bit crazy. Like, as you can tell, like not every coach does this and name the sport. It's not just curling. Like I think about it a lot, about how an individual practice works. So not every coach, and I'm trying to like let go of that a bit. But I want practices to work as efficiently as possible, to the point where like an hour before practice, I won't print out my check-in list until I know which coaches and kids are coming. And trust me, it's never perfect because I'm on my way to the club and I have my phone on. It's just my level of comfort of what I do.
It sounded like you mentioned this earlier. You take attendance and you try to have a list of who's going to be there each week. So do you sort of send out, hey, if you're away on Sunday, let me know.
Yep. Is that absolutely?
Okay. Yeah, fair enough.
Absolutely.
Yep. We don't do that at High Park Club. And I've thought about doing it before. And it's just one of those things where it's kind of, let's get them on the ice and we roll with it. People are often great though to let us know they won't be there, but it's more just let's see who shows up and then we'll massage it when we get there. But I like your approach.
I think it's only common courtesy that someone lets you know that they're not going to be there.
Oh, I could tell you stories, Lindsay. Oh. And I don't mean about curling. Well, I don't mean about curling. I could talk about society in general here about that one.
But that's what I've asked, like our parents do. If you can't make it, let me know as soon as you can, just because I've got to make other arrangements then, or I have to change what I plan on doing that day if you're not going to be here. So, it used to be bad a couple of years ago, because when we had all the kids on the ice at the same time, well, you're trying to divide up helpers or like parents or coaches with how many kids. And I mean, to do it like 2 minutes before you go out on the ice is insane. So,
yeah, I'm a big like pre-planner, like as you can probably tell. And I'm more obsessed about this than most coaches are. And that's not, there's no wrong or right. Like if it works with your program, it's right.
Yeah, I know with us, it's like the one thing we do have every week is here is the lesson plan. And it goes out on like a Friday or a Saturday. Usually I have a co-lead with me, Rob Gray. He's fantastic. He serves as most like the, he's the main point on the ice, and he puts out a lesson plan every week. It's great. He might run up by me week to week to see what we think in that. But that lesson plan is emailed out to all coaches, and we have one printed per sheet when they get there. So they've all had a chance. And sometimes we'll even be like, make sure you really read this one before you get here. If you can't, before you get here, I said before, and I'll sound like a broken record. They're like, structure builds success.
Well, hi, Park Mike. I can tell, I can speak for like other coaches that I've known through the years. A lot of coaches appreciate that, the fact that you're putting that information out beforehand. They have a chance to look at it, like not just on the day, like 5 minutes before practice starts, which happens because that's life.
Well, you want to like keep those coaches coming back. So if you like sort of you say like that's my thought as well. If I know I'm going to show up on Sunday as a junior, like turn out a junior coach, but as a new coach, and it's going to be here's the plan. That I know I'm going to just feel that much more comfortable, 100%.
Yeah. I have one more topic to talk about. I know that this has been an awesome discussion so far, and we're not going to cover everything, but I'm sure
I think we almost have. What are you talking about here?
I think we could have gone down different
episode
branches.
One.
There we go. Series. I said before that I've only have four practices left. We're approaching the end of the season. And are there any considerations for either of you? I know from my perspective, but I'll let you guys take the lead here. There are kids that are aging out. I've got like 9 kids that are going to technically age out of my Little Rocks and move to juniors, hopefully, knock on wood, right? Are you doing things with them now to get them ready for next season? Like we talked a bit about maybe promoting them within the season. I mean, at my club, at my program, I think about that a lot, about how can I put them in the best position to succeed in juniors. And I'll give you one example from my perspective. During the Family Day weekend, during the March break weekend, we usually don't have a Little Rocks practice just because like parents and kids are away, families do things. But I do say go over to the junior practice because they're running if you're going to be aging out of my program. So it gives you a taste of what you're eventually going to move into. Lindsay, Mike, High Park, Mike, is there anything that you do at your programs?
I can go first.
Okay.
Is there anything that we're doing specific for the kids that are going to be aging up? And for the most part, we're not really doing anything more than what I'd mentioned with Lindsay Mike, or the promotion of the of curlers. Like you're 11 or 12, you want a little more ice time, come on up to the juniors on Saturdays or Wednesdays and have that opportunity. We do try though on our sheet one, which is our older kids, that generally gets into pretty much pure games as we're going along sort of towards the end. We kind of, aside from the interruption of, I shouldn't call it an interruption, but with the addition of Hit, Draw, and Tap for the next 2 to 3 weeks, we were using a process of games 1 week, skills, and a little bit of more games 1 week, and then sort of like repeat. So just pure games, pure skills, pure that. But I think what we'll be doing is more for the kids on sheet one, just likely having them just doing games for that time, just to get them into that, like, hey, you know, when you get to juniors, you're going to be playing 1 week of games every week. So we have a little bit more of that introduction to them as well. But aside from that, nothing really much. I kind of like what you just said there, Glenn, though, about, hey, you want to come play on the juniors if you're one of the older kids. That's a good opportunity on like the family day or the March break, because I know we just had a discussion with the coaches. We're curling on family day. We're not curling the first Sunday of March break, but we're going to curl the second. So I might, as that date approaches, go to my 2011s and those two 2012s that are keen, and I might suggest that. So that's a good idea. So thanks for the tip.
And really, I don't have enough kids. There's two or three that would pick things up really well, and I would put them up with the older kids for next year. But what they're doing right now is they're curling in their Little Rocks program, beginners program, and then they're sticking around and doing it in the juniors. So they're getting like 2.5 hours of curling in for the day. They might want to keep doing that next year. I'd be more than welcome, happy if they wanted to do that. But if they want to move up to the older group, they're more than welcome to do that too. Now, I know sort of outside of curling, like I used to do scouts and cubs and beavers. And what they used to do was when a kid was in his last year of whatever group he was in, they would get kids from the older group to act as mentors with them. So they would come up for like two or three meetings before the end of the year, and they'd have kids assigned, like I said, as mentors to them, and to introduce them and tell them the rules and what they do and everything else. Now, you need kids that are good at that. You can't just stick any kid to do something like that. It's just some kids are good, some kids, I don't want to be with him or whatever else. So you sort of ask for volunteers, and you know the kids, you know who would be good at it and stuff. I can see with the curling, you say you have 9 kids moving up. Well, find another 9 or, well, what's 9 and 8, 16, 24. Right. So say 16. So you need find another 5 kids or something else. You can mix them up together and play a couple games or something like that in the last couple of weeks. And so they get to meet some of the older kids that are coming. They'll be curling with the next year.
Yeah. Well, Lindsay, Mike, our program's most, like the Little Rocks program at East York is mostly a light rocks program. We don't really introduce adult rocks, but the exception is the second half of our season, the oldest kids who are moving up, we usually isolate them in sheets 1 and 2, and just, it's 9 kids, right? So generally it's like 2 teams. We've been isolating them on those sheets and getting them exclusively working with adult rocks. There's also a practical reason. It's because a lot of Little Rock Sponspiels are using adult rocks now. So, you know, it helps them getting ready for the next level, but it also, in a competitive sense, it gets them ready if they want to play, you know, any number of Little Rock adult rock Sponspiels. It used to be that Little Rocks meant Little Rocks, but just the way things are developing, most of these under 12 events are now using adult rocks. So we got to get them prepped, period.
Yeah. And like we have one set of, the little rocks, like the half weight rocks that we use with the 8-year-olds and things like that. But you can't afford, you can buy a whole set of rocks for what, 6 sheets. You don't know how many kids you're going to have each year. And they're not cheap things to buy.
You have that though, Glenn, right? You have 6 sheets of Little Rocks. Yeah. That was impressed the first time I came to your club and I saw that.
I'm not going to lie. We've got really good support, and it's not the least, the fact of which is a lot of board members and people in higher positions at our club have had kids in my program and have been coaches. I'm not going to lie. We've been really lucky, and that's a benefit. That's a tribute to East York. Like they believed in it that much. Yeah, it's 6 sheets of light rocks. They committed to buying those, and we've had them for several years now.
And if your program has as many kids as you have, you don't feel bad about that at all. But if you only had 12 kids coming out, then it would be like, oh gosh, they spent all that money and I've only got 12 kids.
Yeah. I get that clubs can't, it's an expense. I get it. So if clubs have to use adult rocks for Little Rocks events, that's just the way it is. But we're getting onto a whole other area. Yeah. I could probably talk about age and stage appropriateness and LTAD and like a whole other thing. It's been about an hour, so I want to respect your time. I don't know if there are any final thoughts. I think I have one, but if High Park Mike, Lindsay Mike, or if there's an ask that you want to ask, the topic we've talked about mostly tonight is how do you manage age and skill differences? I don't know. Is there a final question or anything that you want to repeat at the end here?
You know, I would just say from my perspective, you want to get the kids where they're going to have the most success. So you're going to have these rules in your head about you want, like I went through how we have everything structured at High Park Club. But you want to move a kid as soon as you realize, you know what, they probably should be on a higher sheet or they should be on a lower sheet. So you're thinking all of like ages and sheets and numbers and that, but just get the kids where you think they're going to have the most success. And then that's going to, like, that's your surefire, but that's your most likely path to having a good program and happy kids on the ice.
Yeah, and that's right. If they're having success, they're having fun, that means that they're going to come back next year. And that's, I mean, that's my only goal, really, is to have them come back next year.
Yeah, that's that's a true measure of success right there, Lindsay. Yeah. If they're back next year, you've done something right.
That's right.
And in that same vein, I wrote down this because it reminded me of a situation this year in my program. Okay, so I had a returning kid. She's now 12, and she brought her best friend, who is, I think, 11 or 12, pretty close. They're in this. And of course, one is experienced and one is not. And then the argument is, well, just, you know, put the one friend in the experienced group and the other one in the beginner group. Well, guess what? And I'm like, this is my one piece of advice. I kept them together as much as I could the whole year. Because trust me, that new kid, that's why she was there. It was because to be with her best friend. Forget about experience and having, you know, age appropriate and experience appropriate groups. They wanted to be together. And that's a lot of kids in your program. They want to be with their friends. And don't get me wrong. I had to break them up sometimes because they knew that this is a sport where you're playing with everyone else. So don't think that you had to link them together for the whole thing. But I kept them together as much as I could. And that's one of the successes this year. Like that's – anyone listening, consider that when you're putting together your skill groups.
Yeah, that's a good point. You want the kids having fun. And if they've got friends, keep them together. I know I used to think a lot like, oh, we should separate so they're meeting new kids and they're doing things with different players. And I've more shifted a little bit more towards what you're saying there, Glenn. Like, I know we have two players who are friends and they're maybe not the strongest curlers that we have, but they play together. They have a good time. They're out there. They come back each week. So like, keep them there. Keep them on the same sheet. Let them have some fun.
Yeah, and they're your best recruiters as the kids, huh?
Yeah.
Because I've got two this year that they came along because they had friends. One of them, their friend quit, but they stuck around. So that was a positive. But,
funny how that happens.
Yeah, they're always – that's why bring a friend day is can be good if you can stage it.
Well, I can tell you about my tri-curling event coming up in March, but maybe this is the opportunity now for both of you to plug your own clubs and if people want to contact you. Lindsay, Mike, tell us what's going on at Lindsay and how can people contact you if they want to?
Contact best is email lindsayyouthcurling@gmail.com. We've got an under 12 bonds bill coming up on the 25th of February. Crayola supplies all the prizes. We have super keen ice. We use full size saddle rocks, but even our 8-year-olds don't have much of a problem getting them down to the other end. So it's we're lucky that way. Some clubs have real heavy ice and I feel sorry for them. But and then in March, we're going to have a junior adults bill. Now, it's been internal. It was just internal last year, but I'm considering opening it up just to anybody in the area that wants to come. So I had parents out who had never curled before last year and they had a 1-day lesson for an hour and a half and they came out and curled for the day. So they had fun. So that's, and then we're pretty much done too. At the end of March, I think we go to, so that will be about it.
Oh, thanks, Lindsay, Mike. I'm impressed with your Crayola sponsorship. How do I get one of those?
Yeah.
That's fantastic.
Have Crayola have their plant in town.
Ah,
yeah. So, and they've done us, the lady that was running the program before me, she got them on board. And so this is going to be about the fourth or fifth year we've had them as a sponsor. So kids get grab bags, Crayola grab bags, and then the prizes are these great big baskets of Crayola stuff. And I gather the kids like it. So it's not heard anything different. So, yeah.
That's awesome, Lindsay, Mike. High Park Mike.
Yeah, so if you want to reach me, the two best ways to do that are littlerocks@highparkclub.com. That's my email address for curling. And I'll tweet about curling a little bit. So at M Gregotsky, that's a good place to find me as well. Usually when we're at a Bondsfield, I'll tweet out a few photos of the kids playing, or I'll tweet a few photos out, sometimes with the players just at our club. I mentioned before, we're doing Hit, Draw, and Tap over. We did it this week. We're going to do it next week. We'll probably be doing it the other week just to deal with absences, kids being away and that. We just want to make sure everybody gets in. We're having a real meeting of the minds, the coaches, of how to like manage the score sheets of who's there, who wasn't, and keeping track from one week to another. So, well, I think we've got that ironed out and we'll sleep better tonight. I guess on the Bondsfield front, we're not hosting any Bondsfields at High Park Club for juniors of Little Rocks. We were part of an intra-club for the juniors that was going around Toronto a few weeks ago. We have a couple teams though that are entering from a couple Bondsfields in the area. Sorry, yours didn't make our radar there, Lindsay, Mike, but we're playing a team. We're going to the Dixie Bondsfield, Dixie Curling Club in Mississauga. We're entering a U13 and a U15 team. And then there's Tim Heather, which I believe is using a very similar model to what you're using, what you used, East York Glen, for your Bondsfield. There's a Hit, Draw, and Tap. We're sending two teams to that. So that's, when we competed in your Bondsfield, Glenn, the Bondsfield bug kind of bit the kids and they brought it back to the club and other ones wanted to go to other ones. So we got, 12 more players going out there to have some more fun.
And really, Bondsfields are where it's at, huh? Yeah. The kids, once they hit that first Bondsfield, you've got them hooked. You've got them for life.
I'm going to keep talking about Glenn's there just because it was, a little recency bias. But the kids had a great time. Everybody had a good time. I'll be quite frank. The parents have a good time. The coaches have a good time. Like there's nothing more I love than walking into a different curling club and seeing that how the ice is and how big it is. The kids at High Park Club we have a very low roof. Our sheets overlap. If you haven't been to High Park Club before, they actually overlap, so you can be out. Your rock can still be in on your sheet, and it's on the other sheet too. So it's not that big. And you would think it comes into play a lot. It almost never comes into play. But you do notice that when you're standing, if you're a sweeper, you're standing at the hog line waiting for to come down to sweep for your team, and you're standing with your back right up against the person at the other sheet, and you think this looks kind of narrow, and then you go to another club, it's not. But yeah, those Bondsfields, like you said, Lindsay, Mike, you get into those, you get to the other clubs, you have some fun, and boy, you just want to keep doing them more and more and more.
Oh, thanks, High Park, Mike. We loved having you visit our club, and thanks for sending a couple of teams to our Bondsfield. Speaking of which, yeah, I'll probably see you at the Tam Heather Bondsfield. I think we're sending a couple of teams to that one as well. I mean, it's nearby. I'm not going to lie. It's pretty close. So what's happening at East York? Well, our season's ending and we have four more practices before, I think, March 26th is our last day. We also have a tri-curling event coming up on March 11th, which is for kids who have never curled before and want to try it for an hour on the ice. And they get an hour on the ice and some snacks afterward. And yeah, I guess that stuff will be on our website. It's a tradition. It's a bit of a fundraiser for us as well. And to top it all off, it looks like my son's coming. So
there you go.
Oh,
my 7-year-old son who's never curled before. So, but knows that daddy's a coach. Sorry?
He talked him into it, did he?
You know what? I told him that if he wanted to curl, he could, but it would be up to him. Daddy would not force him to be there. So he wants to show up on the 11th. So we'll see. He's playing ice hockey this fall.
That'll keep you busy. You did a podcast episode, previous one, on this topic, if I recall, didn't you, Glenn? About your son not being in the program. Am I making that up, or am I?
I think there were two episodes.
Okay.
I think one of them was literally, the one question I get from every parent in my program, which is, is your son going to be a part of this? Is your son joining Little Rocks? And they've asked me since he was, almost born, I think. Over the years, I've had parent coaches in my program who had kids in the program at the same time. And I always saw the interaction and the bit of the dynamic. And if it inevitably comes true that my son joins my program, it's one thing to be coach and it's another thing to be dad.
Mm-hmm.
So
there's a couple episodes on that one.
I don't think I'll be starved for material if he ever joins my program. But the mics, High Park Mike, Lindsay Mike, thanks for joining me tonight. Yeah, we're going to have to do this again. So good luck with the rest of your seasons, and we'll see you out on the ice.
Thank you for having us.
Yeah, thanks, guys. This was a lot of fun.
So that was my conversation with Mike Smith of Lindsay Curling Club and Mike Rogotsky of High Park Club in Toronto. If you're a supporter of this podcast, I encourage you to follow our Twitter account, which is the @ followed by Kids Curling. One more time, the @ followed by Kids Curling. I'll also have that Twitter handle listed in today's show notes. This has been the Coaching Kids Curling Podcast. To reach me, Coach Glenn, please email coachingkidscurling@gmail.com. To follow this podcast for free, visit our website, coachingkidscurling.com. You can also find show notes and links to the resources mentioned in this episode and in previous episodes. The intro and outro music is Golden Sunrise by Josh Woodward. Thanks for listening. Good luck and good curling.